Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's webinar on the subject of RIOS 2016. Today we'll be providing an overview of the RIOS standard. For anyone who is considering initial certification to RIOS 2016 or just wants to get more familiar with the requirements of the standard. My name is Austin Matthews. I am the EHS Program Manager with Perry Johnson Registrars. Welcome. I have an agenda on this slide where we go through some of the high-level items we'll be covering today. We'll open up talking a little bit about PJR, who we are, what we do. We'll highlight the benefits of certification to a standard like RIOS 2016. We'll cover the key requirements or those high-level expectations. We'll provide an overview of the standard in a general sense and then get into a little bit more detail going through clause by clause, or at least the majority of the clauses, to get you a little bit more familiar with the standard itself. Benefits of certification vary by industry, by location, and a number of other factors, but generally, these are some of the most common benefits of certification to RIOS certification. The certification process, implementing and maintaining the RIOS standard, drives improvement to the organization's quality, environmental, health, and safety performance, and the minimization of risk just by going through the expectations, implementing the requirements. You are driving improvement. You're seeking out those opportunities to improve and to minimize risk. There are benefits associated with material sourcing controls and outsourcing controls via implementing the requirements of the standard. Improvements to management commitment and employee engagement levels as well. Being able to advertise a certification like RIOS can provide a competitive advantage over other companies that do not hold the same certification that might be competing for the same job or the same bid. It can also provide an improved public image or boost a public image, whereas perhaps previously there wasn't a sense of responsibility or sustainability attached to that particular company's image. There can be other potential financial benefits beyond those we just discussed with the competitive advantage and improved public image where applicable. Some industries might see reduction in insurance premiums, for example, depending on the nature of the certification held, especially those which, like the RIOS standard, incorporate some health and safety controls. The standard also represents a framework for meeting customer and/or regulatory requirements, another benefit of certification. The standard itself represents a commitment to the responsible management of recyclable materials. So that in and of itself, being able to advertise that certification, that commitment, can be yet another benefit. RIOS is able to be integrated with other management system standards, such as the R2V3 standard. Just first starting with a bird's eye view of the RIOS 2016 standard, some of the key requirements that stand out to me are the emphasis on leadership, especially when we compare RIOS 2016 to its predecessor, RIOS 2006. A greater focus on proactivity and risk management. an emphasis on the outcomes of the management system. So the outcomes are emphasized rather than some other mechanisms that might have been emphasized in the past, such as continual improvement of the system rather than continually improving the outcomes of the system. Communication and awareness are key requirements in RIOS 2016, and these include stakeholder communications and any requirements that customers might have. The concept of change management is another key requirement in RIOS 2016 that we did not really see accounted for in RIOS 2006. Some general information I'd like to share just really quickly. The RIOS standard does need to be purchased. RIOS has some requirements in place that I'd like to make clients aware of, in advance. They are perhaps a little bit different than some other standards you may be familiar with. One of those such requirements is that during recertification audits, all NCRs, even minors, require evidence of effective implementation before the NCR can be closed. For other audit types, you might have time between your audit and your subsequent audit to implement the actions you've identified to be appropriate to close an NCR. However, for a recertification audit, the findings would need to be fully closed. It also requires that the auditor be replaced each recertification audit. So every 3 years, you'll have an auditor who has not previously audited your facility for a fresh set of eyes and a value-added audit experience. RIOS requires annual membership fees be paid for the membership to be maintained in order to be eligible for RIOS certification. And the standard requires certain areas or controls to be sampled every year. Some examples of that might be competency and training requirements, communication, monitoring and measurement, operational processes against which NCRs were issued not just the previous year, but the year before that. Now we'll go through clause by clause. We won't hit on every single clause. I want to touch on clauses in which we see some of those key requirements we were alluding to earlier, or some of the more significant expectations. Again, this will not cover every single clause in the standard. The standard begins with an introduction section. Here you'll find notes within the standard, information about the notes within the standard. And those notes throughout the standard provide additional guidance, but they are not in and of themselves auditable. Clause 1 covers general requirements in the standard. Specifically, Clause 1.1 focuses on scope and application. Here we need to remember that we need to consider actions by outside providers in the scope. This won't be relevant for all organizations, but it does need to be considered, and where applicable, it will need to be included. The footprint that the organization maintains should include any activities performed by outside providers. One example of an outside provider would be a contractor. Subclause 1.1.1 focuses on the RIOS outcomes. This section outlines the implementation criteria, intended outcomes, and calls for proactivity. We see the concept of proactivity coming up a couple times throughout the standard. Subclauses 1.2.1 through 1.2.3 within the QEHS infrastructure section outline the requirements for assigning responsibilities, having a management representative, and for senior management to be committed, involved, and accountable. It's ultimately their responsibility to ensure that resources are adequately allocated to support the intended outcomes of the management system. Here we see the abbreviation QEHSMS. That stands for Quality, Environmental, Health and Safety Management System. The Rio standard includes quality, environmental, and health and safety, which for the ISO standards, you would see covered by three different standards. 1.3 houses the document and record keeping control expectations. Here we see documentation system expectations similar to those found in ISO 14001, 2015, if any of you are familiar with that standard, where flexibility is allowed or built into the requirements, since controlled documents can realistically take many different forms in the current media types and virtual options. Clause 2 covers policy requirements. Here you'll find requirements related to the evaluation of impacts and risks, annual reviews, senior management commitment again, and more. Clause 3 focuses on planning activities. 3.1 specifically covers identifying the RIOS footprint. It requires proactive planning. So here we have that proactivity again. It expects that the organization will assess their RIOS footprint, including purchasing, source material acquisition, transport, delivery, looking at things from cradle to grave to the extent that the organization has the potential to impact. Do they have choices when it comes to source material acquisition? And if so, how are they taking that into consideration? This can include positive attributes, not just negative impacts. And the RIOS footprint is required to be maintained up to date, to be kept up to date, reviewed for changes, and assessed prior to making changes that could impact the quality environmental health and safety management system. Assessed prior to making changes comes back to the change management concept that we listed on the key requirements slide earlier. 3.1 is broken up into several subclauses, the first of which, 3.1.1, covers important quality risks. This section requires the identification and control of risks that can affect product and/or service quality. Risk is defined as the effect of uncertainty, and it can be positive or negative. Some examples of quality risk might include, but are not limited to, theft, ineffective training, losing key employees, equipment or tool breakdowns, etc. 3.1.2 and 3.1.3 respectively cover important environmental impacts and important health and safety risks. There are additional requirements found in these subclauses, including documentation of rating criteria in the case of environmental impacts and controls in the case of health and safety risks. 3.1.4 addresses legal requirements, and this is to include any product requirements that are relevant to the organization. And the controls, again, need to be documented. 3.1.5 covers product, service, and customer requirements. This requires the documentation of any applicable requirements and monitoring methodologies. Some examples include products, customer requirements, outsourced activities, source material specifications. All of these and more would need to be considered depending on the organization's processes. This section also requires verification that those requirements are being met and records of conformity. 3.1.6 covers other stakeholder requirements not covered in the previous subclauses. And it requires that the stakeholders be identified as well as their respective requirements be identified. Controls would then need to be implemented accordingly based on those requirements. And these are to be reviewed annually. It would be a good idea to take a look at the stakeholder definition to ensure you are thinking along the right lines or including all applicable parties. Examples include owners, landlords, insurance companies, and so on. 3.2 focuses on improvement planning. So we see the concepts of establishing goals, planning for goal achievement in 3.2.1 and 3.2.2. There are several inputs or items to be considered when establishing the goals. And 3.2.2 requires written plans that identify the tasks, the resource needs, assign responsibilities, identify due dates, and identify methods for the evaluation of results. 3.3 covers the change management process we alluded to earlier. This section requires a written plan to review the footprint for relevant changes prior to implementing a change to the management system. The change management expectation goes hand in hand with the tone of proactivity that we've been drawing attention to throughout the webinar, where changes are proactively assessed and discussed to account for potential negative impacts, rather than implementing a change and then reacting to whatever injuries or breakdowns or releases could be a result of that change. Clause 4 focuses on implementation. 4.1 addresses recycler knowledge. I want to draw your attention to subclauses 4.1.1 and 4.1.2, where the competency and awareness requirements are covered respectively. The organization needs to identify the competency requirements, maintain records as evidence of competence, and verify effectiveness of any competency methodologies in place. Training needs to consider identified criteria from this section, and all of this is as relevant to the intended outcomes of the management system. Some employees or some tasks or possibly some job titles may have a significant impact or potential to impact the management system, while others may have very little potential to impact the outcomes of the management system. So that can be taken into consideration as well. The awareness topics and requirements are outlined in 4.1.2. 4.2 houses a number of communication expectations. So in general, the clause requires documentation of the organization's communication plans, but the subclauses get into more specific expectations and types of communication. 4.2.2 covers customer communication. It includes customer qualifications, if any, as well as any quality, environmental, health, and safety requirements that the customer may have. 4.2.3 covers supplier communication. This includes communication of source control requirements, load rejections, errors, and so on. 4.2.4 covers outside supplier communication. This would be communication with contractors or similar groups. 4.2.5 covers external communication, otherwise not covered. This requires communication of relevant quality environmental health and safety information with visitors, stakeholders, and so on. Some examples of what might need to be communicated could include the emergency plans, reporting on-site chemicals to the local fire department, tier 2 chemical storage reporting, etc. Operational controls are covered in 4.3. 4.3.1 looks carefully at source materials. There would be controls and requirements related to suppliers. 4.3.2 covers outsourced providers, products, and services. Criteria similar to purchasing controls would be expected here. These would be documented specifications, controls relative to the potential quality, environmental, health, and safety impact, records of evaluation, monitoring, etc. Quality controls are addressed in 4.4. This requires documentation of specifications and criteria, worker instructions, etc. 4.5 and 4.6 cover environmental controls and health and safety controls, respectively. 4.5 requires documented controls to minimize any environmental impacts, while 4.6 requires documented controls to minimize health and safety hazards, including hazards related to outsourcing, source materials, contractors, off-site activities, chemicals, equipment, and so on. (clears throat) 4.7 covers emergency preparedness. This would represent the client organization's emergency plan or their response expectations in the event of an emergency. These plans or expectations need to be communicated in accordance with Clause 4.2. Clause 5 covers checking and corrective action. 5.1 specifically looks at monitoring and measurement, what details, what items need to be included within the monitoring and measurement plan. While 5.1.1 looks at which activities require monitoring or measurement and how they will be monitored. 5.1.2 looks at how quality, environmental, health, and safety compliance will be monitored. This requires an annual evaluation of legal and stakeholder requirements. It also includes verbiage about competency for the people or person evaluating compliance. 5.1.3 addresses maintenance and calibration of monitoring equipment. Here we find requirements such as documentation of requirements and actions taken to address any out-of-tolerance monitoring devices if and when they are found. 5.1.4 covers the analysis of monitoring and measurement results, how the monitoring and measuring outputs become inputs to the management review. 5.2 covers nonconformances and corrective and preventive actions. 5.2.2 covers environmental health and safety incident investigations. The standard requires investigation for all EHS incidents. When you look at the definition of incident, you'll find that this includes near misses as well. And including near misses in this expectation helps uphold the proactivity concept. Previous NCRs for 2 audit cycles will now be reviewed for effectiveness instead of the previous requirement for looking at just the previous 1 year audit cycle. I mentioned this earlier in some of those key expectations or general reminders. 5.3 covers internal RIOS audits. This is an annual audit requirement, looking at the full management system to evaluate at least prior to certification or recertification. So we need to be able to demonstrate that not only are the audits conducted annually, but at least before each recertification audit every 3 years and that initial certification audit, that a full system internal audit was performed. This section also covers the written plan requirements. Clause 6 focuses on management review, and here you'll find identified the required inputs and required outputs to the management review activity. For anyone who is pursuing initial certification to RIOS or considering initial certification, these next couple slides will outline the certification process, and then we'll have time for any questions that you might have at the end. The first step in pursuing certification to a given standard is to purchase that standard or get a hold of a copy of that standard for standards that are not that are available for free. In this case, RIOS needs to be purchased. You'll then go on to establish documentation to support those RIOS requirements to be able to create the framework for your quality environmental health and safety management system. You'll conduct any training that's required for your quality environmental health and safety management system. You'll implement those QEHSMS requirements, including conducting an internal audit, conducting a compliance evaluation, and having your management review based on the outputs from the internal audit. You'll also require a contract with a certification body such as Perry Johnson Registrars to conduct those audits for you. You'll then complete stage one and stage two audits, address any resulting nonconformities before a certificate can be issued. Those registration audits are broken down into stage one and stage two audits. The stage one audit activity is primarily a document review of the quality environmental health and safety management system. There may be documentation that's required to be submitted prior to the stage one for PGR to review as well. And this essentially evaluates the readiness of the organization to proceed to the stage two audit. The stage two audit is a full system audit to assess how the requirements of the standard have been implemented and whether the system is effectively meeting the requirements of the standard as well as its own processes or procedures. Any nonconformities identified during the stage two to RIOS will need to be resolved prior to certificate issuance. Once a certificate is issued, it is good for 3 years. You enter the following 2 years of surveillance audit cycles. These could be scheduled at 6 or 12 month intervals, depending on the contract. And these would represent partial system audits, not quite as lengthy as the stage two, perhaps. Certainly not necessarily a full system audit covering all of the processes and shifts. This would be considered a partial system audit each of those 2 years. The third year in the audit cycle would represent the recertification audit, very similar to the stage two in the sense that it's considered a full system audit and would result, once any nonconformities are closed, in another 3 year certificate to start the cycle anew. If you have any questions, perhaps you're already doing so, feel free to type those in the question field for GoToWebinar right now. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, and in case they are not well suited for a webinar type format, I'm going to put my contact information on this last slide as well. So again, my name is Austin Matthews. I am the EHS Program Manager with PJR. I can be reached by calling the main PJR line, by sending an email. And I've also included the contact phone number for the sales department. If you are a prospective client looking for a quote or some assistance in getting the ball rolling, that would be a wonderful place to start. And as I mentioned, today's presentation is being recorded so that a copy of the slides, as well as a copy of the recording, can be made available on PJR's website for your later reference. Okay, let's see if we have any questions that I can answer. But I saw someone with their hand up earlier, so maybe they're still typing. I'm gonna hang out for a couple minutes here. And for anyone who joined us today but does not have any questions, thank you so much for joining us for today's webinar. We offer EHS webinars on a variety of subjects, so please feel free to check our schedule of webinars and pop in for any other subjects that might be interesting to you. Okay, we have a question. Is Rios most suitable for recycling, waste management services versus manufacturing? I've seen the Rios standard be utilized in a number of types of industries. Unlike the R2V3 standard, it's not limited to electronics recycling activities. So Rios has a broader scope in that it covers recycling of a number of materials. I wouldn't say it's limited to waste management services, however. We see a number of manufacturing facilities that have a high volume of recyclables coming out of their processes. They have source control capabilities, they have transport, they have raw material acquisition, all of which we can utilize Rios to help make some sustainable or more responsible decisions. It is primarily utilized in the recycling industry, but I would not say it's exclusively intended for the recycling industry, no. And if you have some specific scenarios that you'd like to talk about in more detail offline, feel free to send me an email. Thanks for that question. Do I have a financial breakdown comparing the Rio standard to the ISO standards? I do not, and I can tell you there are a number of differences between the two. For example, while Rios compiles the quality, environmental, health, and safety standards into one standard, for ISO to cover those three concepts, you would need three individual certifications that can, coupled with the way audit time is calculated for the ISO standards, result in a higher number of audits or a longer audit duration in some cases. The ISO standard audit time is based on a number of factors, including employee counts and risk, which is industry specific, while Rios is not calculated in the same manner. Rios also has their annual membership fees. So perhaps the annual fee is a trade-off for potentially shorter audit duration compared to the ISOs. There are a number of differences, and I would say it really depends on your organization what will make the most sense. We would have to quote the audit time for each to really be able to give a comparison. Thanks for that question. Do we think Rios could or will become a standard customer requirement in the future, similar to ISO 9000? Well, I hope that there is pressure put on organizations across the various industries to make more sustainable decisions, to increase their recycling efforts, take ownership or accountability of the types of packaging materials they are sourcing, responsible raw material acquisition methodologies, looking at that cradle to grave approach. If that will specifically be Rios, I can't say, but I certainly hope that there is more emphasis placed on having a more sustainable approach. Rios could be part of that, sure. We also see a number of clients who are transitioning to the R2v3 standard from the R2 2013 standard, for anyone familiar with that, that are utilizing Rios to fulfill the quality, environmental, health, and safety requirements. The standard has prerequisites depending on the processes. The latest revision of the eSteward standard, version 4.1, one of the key changes there was to allow Rios to be accepted as a prerequisite standard, whereas the previous version only accepted ISO 14001. So in general, even just for those two reasons alone, I do expect an uptick in the number of Rios certified organizations. What are the requirements for Rios auditor certification? It depends on whether an auditor already has experience and is a lead auditor in other standards. There is a Rios lead auditor course, just as there is for other standards. And then each CB probably has their own qualification expectations. Again, for PGR, it depends on whether you're already a lead for other standards. In the event that an auditor already is a lead for other standards at PGR, typically we require the lead auditor course for that standard, as well as some observation or witness activities. If they're already a lead for other standards with PGR, then we've already vetted their soft skills, their ability to navigate the PGR documentation and record keeping methodologies. So we would be specifically looking to verify understanding and effective auditing of the standard itself through at least one observation audit activity. More may be required for an auditor who is not already a lead. We have a more robust process to ensure that not only are they competent in the standard requirements, they are competent in PGR's expectations so that they can provide value-added audits for our clients. Thank you for those questions. I'm not seeing any others in the queue at the moment, but I will hang out for another moment or two in case someone is typing. Otherwise, again, thank you for joining us today. If you've got an upcoming audit to Rios, I hope the contents of this webinar were helpful. I wish you the best of luck during your upcoming audits. Feel free to reach out via email or get a hold of the sales department if you are looking to learn more about certification or begin the process of receiving a quote. And since I don't see any other questions, I'll be signing off now. Thank you so much for joining us. Please take a look at our website for a copy of the slides and a copy of the recording for your future reference. Thanks so much and have a great week.